And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9, our first episode of 2010. I'm Dan Fernandez.
I'm Clint Ruckus.
And Brian Keller is somewhere, Codemash?
Codemash in, I believe, Ohio.
Yes.
At the world's largest, or the U.S.'s largest water park, I believe.
Is he going to the water park? Is it
I
indoor?
I hope so. If it's outdoors, man, he still should do it.
Yeah, he really should call in. How was it? How was your New Year?
It was fun. I did some cool stuff. Went to Chicago, did some stuff around Seattle. I got to play with Visual Studio 2010, finally.
Yeah.
So, I was quite happy. It was a good New Year. How was yours?
Good. I didn't get too many geeky presents. I played a couple games, though.
Okay.
Oh, Torchlight. Grand Theft Auto
okay.
4, which I had
only
gotta love that Steam has these crazy discounts. I got Grand Theft Auto 4 for $4.99.
Wow, man, I feel ripped off now.
Exactly. So make sure to, if you're a gamer, subscribe to Steam because they will have some crazy discounts
so
every now and then.
Speaking of geeky gifts, I actually forgot about this one. My aunt gave me a little spy camera that records to, I believe, AVI that you just plug in as a USB drive.
Yeah, I'm sure we can find a use for that thing. In all seriousness.
I believe we can.
Let's just make sure it's legal. So let's get right first to recap last year and the cliffhanger. We didn't talk about this. So we were going back and forth, and what we're going to do, we're going to go through all the entries for the Photoshop contest, but instead of picking a winner, because how can you pick your favorite? You know, it's like kids, you know. I love this one for this. This one clearly
without having kids, I secretly can say there is a favorite.
Okay, well, good for you. But everybody will receive I think it's a free copy of Office 2007. So you'll have to email me, dan.fernandez@microsoft.com. We'll put it in the notes. But everybody that submitted an entry, besides Pete, because Pete works for Microsoft.
Okay.
So we'll go through these. So first is Chetka. He loves it when I say his name like that.
I think it's Chad K.
Yes, and his icon has picture of what is clearly a gerbil and not a cat. But this is a Jay Sharp reference, which...
Ooh, he's quite happy Keller isn't here today.
Yes, yes, when I actually got to kill Jay Sharp Express, that was my best day ever. So, a wonderful Photoshop. Next is Dr. Herbie. You know Nick Fillingham, of course. Doesn't he kind of look like Dr. Herbert? We need a profile, just so people can see. And would a Roomba get the bloodstains out of the carpet after I invite Dan over for dinner?
Actually, I think he needs a scuba. The mopper version.
Ooh, I haven't seen the scuba.
I have one.
Does it work well?
Yes.
Would it get the bloodstains out of the carpet?
I have not tested, but it got a 2 liter of soda out of my... concrete apartment or the floor at my old apartment.
Hmm, interesting.
So I was quite impressed with it.
And normally what I do is think about pink kitties, so that's pretty much on point.
Your office does have pictures of them, so
it's he could have just, you know, put my ATM code because he's like 6666 and boom, it's
yeah.
Because he's in my head. And then actually love this one. Nintaku's it's just random crazy stuff. That little guru.
It's the Monty Python version.
Yeah, exactly. And of course the little angelic.
I would have given bonus points if this was Silverlight though, animated.
Yeah, but it was a Photoshop contest, so it can't be an app contest because then it's like
you change the rules.
Coming
okay,
soon, people start doing movie trailers for it, which are. Still be kind of funny. And then CodeLogic did... This is sort of like the developer version. I like that we have the laptops, although it makes us look like we're doing something inappropriate underneath our, if you remove the laptops. But
are you guys just instant messaging one another?
Could be. Could be. And then, of course, Pete, which did... Keller and I usually take the sofa out to the beach, so maybe we should go back to a wide angle. And
I think you guys need to work on your tan slightly, though.
Keller does. Okay, so getting back to the real news, thanks again for those Photoshop entries. Those made us laugh like crazy. And thanks, everyone. And again, email me for the prizes. All right, so one of the things that around, I think it was mid-December, Soma and a couple other people did a blog posting on Beta 2, some of the issues that the community had found, and said, please ship an RC before the RTM, and the team is going to do that. The official term is that it will ship in February 2010. That's our official statement. And what this also means, now that we'll have a go-live license. So you'll be able to take that RC, which has a ton of performance improvements. There's an internal version that we can play with, actually, if you want to try it out.
That's actually what I'm playing with right now.
So I think people really appreciate this. And the other key thing to take away from this is RTM is actually pushed out several weeks. So they haven't announced the exact RTM date.
April 12th. Yes, they did announce it.
Publicly?
Yes.
You're sure?
Yes.
Okay. If not, you'll hear a beep, and then...
I believe it's April 12th. Yeah.
It's not a believe thing. It's a, have we publicly announced it?
Mary J. Foley and Guthrie.
She is not a Microsoft
representative. Guthrie tweeted it.
Okay, as long as...
If not, you won't see me next week. Because Keller will be here.
Yes. All right, so on to CES 2010.
Okay. So for those who aren't aware of the term NUI, it's Natural User Interface. And Bill Buxton is our primary user interface researcher.
He's like the principal researcher. He's just known for interface design.
So he went ahead and created, or did a nice little talk on it. But for those who don't know what NUI is, it's like Project Natal is probably one of the biggest examples of it, where you're not using a keyboard, a mouse, you're using other ways of interacting with a computer. So whether it's through voice, a computer system, figuring out what you want. In the video, he talked about a really cool example that most people wouldn't think would be NUI, but it would be like, so you take your device, and I want to transfer my screen to the big screen, and all I would do is just do that and do a finger gesture, and it would know that I want to transfer my screen to there. Now, that seems simple, but it's still getting my device to talk to a different device and figuring out, hey, well, it's pointed there. I did this gesture. I should do this action. So it's not as easy as it sounds, and only now are we getting computers fast enough to do this. Most cars now have NUI-style interfaces, the newer ones with speech recognition systems.
Mm-hmm.
So... you know, when you say turn up my temperature and it turns it down, it's because it's still an evolving technology.
Now, do you use the speech one? So we own Acura cards, not to plug them, but they have a speech reco.
Yeah.
Do you use yours?
I did when I first got it, and then I found it's just easier. My biggest problem would be, so I have XM Radio, now owned by Sirius. And I would be like XM station 47, and then it would turn to like FM radio or turn up my temperature. And I just said, screw it, and just it was faster to hit the button.
Now, the only time I do it is actually for, I agree with you, I did it because it was like a novelty.
Yeah.
And then when it stopped working 100% of the time, I stopped using it and just
hold it. Now, I will say, whenever I have a rental
phone book, I do. The phone book feature I do, and
well,
actually
you have a newer car, so I don't know if your car can pull contacts off your phone. Mine couldn't, or mine can't, because I have a 2008.
No, I manually entered.
Yeah,
like,
I don't have that dedication to it. But when I have a rental car with Ford Sync, I do, and I have my Zune plugged into it. I will actually, you know, say play artist the Rolling Stones, and that Ford Sync technology is pretty good. Like, I've never really had an issue with it.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, they're two separate systems, so don't judge it on the Acura system. Try it out for whatever car you're getting or however you want to.
And just real quick, I think it's Fiat is coming out using their
Kia.
Is it Kia?
Kia.
Yes. I'm sorry. Fiat now owns Chrysler.
Yes.
Yes. Kia came out with their version of Sync, which has another name.
UVI, I believe?
Yes. UVI?
UVI?
Okay. I don't know how to pronounce it. But so anyways, for people checking out cars or other examples of natural user interface, check this out. And that was announced at CES 2015.
Yeah, Vista, and for those who don't know, Vista and Windows 7 have speech recognition built into it with machine learning. So... the more you use it, the better it's going to get.
I don't have the patience. my personal thing, I think it needs to...
It's getting there.
It's getting there. So speaking of more technology at CES, this is Ray Kurzweil. Ray's actually a fascinating guy. I got to hear him talk at the Game Developer Conference about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Amazing keynoter. Just talks about sort of the future and how things move in a logarithmic scale and continue to evolve in a logarithmic scale. But anyways, one of the things he's been involved in is something called the Blio. And the Blio is a Kindle-like device to try and, I guess, phrase it. But it's a digital e-book reader
okay.
that has a much richer experience. So it has things like color. It has a... It maintains the way the book was designed. It has interaction built within it. It has annotations. Just a number of different... features. They have the software version of it now
okay.
That you can play with, and I think it's blioreader.com. Definitely check this out. I think they have over a million titles
oh, wow.
already, so really, really cool stuff. And it looks, it's also built in WPF, the client, and XPS for okay. the actual documents. So,
okay.
Yeah, so cool stuff to check out. And kudos on Larry's for those videos. This is publishing videos on Windows Azure. So, Silverlight streaming going away. Yep. You want to publish a video, and you don't want to use YouTube. Say, for example, building your business or whatever, for whatever reason. This is David Syed went through the step-by-step instructions for how to set up a Windows Azure account. Yep. How to actually get videos up and the things to do for in terms of encoding your videos, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want to know how to publish videos on Windows Azure, this is what you need.
Okay. So just why would I want to use, let's say, Azure versus YouTube?
Let's say you want a higher quality, higher fidelity video.
Okay.
Let's say you want a downloadable video without having to use Dan's InnerTube. Example.
Okay, so you get to put on your Chrome, you control the content versus someone else.
Absolutely.
But it's on the Azure Edge or the Azure cloud system.
Yeah, you can build the a custom viewer. I mean, yeah. There's just a number of things you can do because you own it end to end.
Okay, cool. So,
yeah.
So WIA, Windows Image Acquisition, and I really hope I got the acronym right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Okay, so Pete Brown, ironically, we're just talking about his entry, created a really cool entry on his blog on how to do WIA with interacting with a scanner in WPF, and he uses the relay command to help interact it so he properly abstracts out his view from his model. So he did a quick little example. We've done some stuff on Coding for Fun in the past. We Scott Hanselman did one, and then Arian Kelp did one with his scanner. Scott Hanselman did a webcam example. Both yep. examples are fairly old. This is showing off with Windows 7, WPF, all the new Chrome. But it's actually surprisingly easy to do it. I mean, all you have to do is go into your add in a reference, go to the COM tab, and it's Microsoft.image.acquisition.library. Add that in, and then Pete has some code you can cut and copy, and it should just work.
Yeah, I think having programmed with WIA before, if you can get a camera that it just works, it's the easiest thing ever.
But if you can't, then
it's just you know so much frustration. So
with the webcam example from Scott, which is I think it was published in 2006.
Yes,
a bunch of people have that problem where a lot of their webcams aren't WIA. Therefore,
exactly.
My typical rep. Guidance
response.
Would be thank you. Would be use DirectShow, which or DirectShow.net.
Yes, which is an open source library.
Yeah.
That gives you DirectShow.
Yeah, and it just makes it super easy. Also,
if only we had some sort of other Coding for Fun project that made image acquisition easier. Scott Guthrie talks about ASP.NET MVC2, and this is, we got a ton of resources on the MVC2. I think a lot of people are, I don't know, they woke up in January and like, MVC2, I got to talk about it. Or the last couple of weeks, because they've included some in December. But this is an overview, and Scott's going to have a series of posts where he goes through step by step. And I love the Goose posts on ASP.NET MVC 2 features. One of the cool things you should remember is MVC 2, you can download the release candidate now, and you can use it on 2008.3.5. So if you're using 2008.3.5, you can use it, and it's going to work on 2010, and those work side by side. So if you, for example, have an MVC 1 project and you want to do an MVC 2 to start evaluating that technology, you can do that. They're not going to break. So,
And actually, one
and
thing
it doesn't need .NET Framework 4.
Yeah, one thing I really like about this, however, is Scott's telling me what the new stuff is in the technology, because that typically, like, when new stuff comes out, I'm always, well, what's in the new version? So I really did like how he pointed out, this is coming, this is coming, this is coming, the new features, so then I can actually check them out and evaluate if they fit my business case.
Yes. So, speaking of which, his first post was on something called strongly typed HTML helpers.
Yeah, so one thing that always drives me nuts is having redundancy. So if I had to type in MVC1, I would have to type HTML.textbox and then put in the string of the property I wanted and then comma model.property name. And now with MVC2, we can just say HTML.textbox4 and then you just do the model and you... that the property name, and then boom, it works.
And it automatically does everything.
It
the keeps, ID name and
yeah,
all that
because
stuff.
It's strong. If you strongly type your view, it just works. And I, for the longest time, that just drove me nuts. I hate redundancy.
Don't repeat yourself.
I will.
Dry. D-R-Y, baby.
Yeah.
All right. So another really interesting feature that David Ebo started talking about is how you can actually wrap MVC user controls, changing the base class. And typically, if you look at this example, you'd have a HTML.partial, which has a .NET path to an ASCX file. And then I pass in parameters into that. In this case, for example, where we have a user control that's a Gravatar user control. So now what you can actually do is say HTML.gravatar, and I'm effectively doing the exact same thing. I'm creating an instance of that user control and passing in parameters, and it's a much cleaner implementation. I have IntelliSense, for example, on the parameters and on the class or the specific type as well. So he walks through the step-by-step on how to do it, but this is I think, really cool.
Yeah.
Frankly,
yeah.
This should be the default behavior, but just say.
Well, and eventually it probably will, so...
Yeah. But very cool find by David Ebo.
Spark Engine.
Yeah, so the Spark View Engine, if you think about ASP.NET MVC, it allows you to actually change the rendering engine.
Yeah.
Right? So one of the rendering engines you can swap out for is called the Spark View Engine. What the Spark View Engine allows you to do, and... actually, when I was working on SonyStyle.com way back in the day, they had basically like HTML style code where you could do things like for loops in HTML code. The Spark View Engine is similar to that. It actually allows you to do markup and say, let's just say, for each this collection, spit out these three properties of, you know, name, address, phone. And that's that level of readability and that level of programmability directly in HTML, where it spits out clean HTML based on those properties. It's one of the reasons a lot of people are interested in Spark View. Now, Scott Hanselman actually did a Hansel Minutes on with the creator of the Spark View engine. But in this specific example, it's Mike Ormond, who's gone through a three-part series on taking the nerddinner.com application, which is, for those of you that are looking, this is probably the best tutorial on ASP.NET MVC for beginners to get started on building your first application. But what it does is build a simple website, and the tutorial is available both in HTML and PDF format for free for download from Scott Goo's blog. And you can add different locations for restaurants, say who's attending, trying to think what else. There's mapping features, et cetera, et cetera. The point is, knowing that, using that as the base example, Mike actually switches from the ASP.NET rendering engine to the Spark View engine, so you can see in a common, simple example how you can take and use the Spark View engine and what that allows you to do within your views.
Yep. Yeah. And I think it's also cool how he rips out one engine and puts in a new one. So.
Yeah, so people that are looking to get started in more of a real-world example versus, say, looking at documentation notes for Spark View, here's a good video series on that.
So 10.4, how to leverage the model metadata and validation with ASP.NET MVC2.
Jonathan Carter.
Jonathan Carter.
Yeah.
So before, typically when you'd be validating data, you'd have to go in and have an if statement and say, you know, if the, you know, let's say your name was less than 3 characters or greater than, you know, 1024, then throw an error. Or if your email wasn't valid, throw an error. Now what they did was he goes out, shows how to take an MVC1 project and a style of doing it, I should say, mm-hmm. and then change it into more of an MVC2 by using the metadata. So all you need to do then is add in a required tag up at top, and then you can for each property. So now you know that this property is required. If not, it's going to throw an error. Say your string, if you want your name to be greater than 3, just say string length 3. You can do regular expressions, et cetera, et cetera. So it makes it
and
a lot
easier.
And
these are attributes on a specific property.
Right. So now when you look at the code, or when you actually are looking at properties, then you can say, oh, this is a required property for this model. And it just makes your life a lot easier rather than having to go hunt down where the validation is happening and verify, is this happening, is this happening, is this happening. Mm-hmm. So it just helps extract out,
you don't have
a
chunk of code that is just the getter, setter, all the. It's an interesting approach. It's actually one of the things that SpecSharp was looking to do in terms of that. So I don't know how much tie-in there is to SpecSharp or what they looked at, but the idea of a zip code isn't just a zip code. There's specific rules, whether depending on the country, you know, or like if it's U.S., it's going to be 5 digits. You know, it's going to be 5 digits. So
it could be what is it? The 9 digits, technically.
Exactly right. So, but in .NET, all you can say is an int32, and you can pass in an int32.
Yeah.
Or an age, where you represent an age as an int, but an age clearly can't be negative. It clearly can't be, you know, above 500 or whatever those values. So I think it's really interesting to think about the business rules and how you can declaratively set those.
Yeah.
Anyways, and I think the other interesting part is consumers of that code could be able to see those metadata attributes, right? So I don't have to pass in a value and say, no, it has to be this, and get an exception. Because I'll actually be able to know beforehand, precondition, if you will. Anyways, I'm rat-holing because it's Picks of the Week!
Picks of the Week!
So Adam Kinney took the writable bitmap X code, and what it allows you to do is take an image, and he's actually built a live demo for you all to play with. This is the Torn Photo Maker. So in this one, I uploaded my beautiful Halloween photo. Click the pick image, and what it does is actually does this destructive, you know, it needs like a corner slightly burnt.
Well, it creates the a wrinkled image approach, like you
wrinkled,
this out.
Ripped, yeah. The whole works, and he goes through how that code actually does. So you can upload any image and make it into a sort of.
And the really cool thing about this is that it is using the writable bitmap EX library, extension library,
mm-hmm.
and that's on CodePlex open source.
Yeah, so, and I think originally, I guess this was a Flash project, so, but a lot of cool stuff, and kudos to Adam for a cool demo.
And now my pick of the week is...
Great picture.
I know. Is the next Barbie career option. So we can pick what the next Barbie career is going to be, and one of the options is computer engineer.
We need to have our best hackers.
Yes.
Everybody needs to architect, surgeon, environmentalist, news anchor. No way, dude. Computer engineer.
So, when I did a quick little Twitter post on it, I found out people were already automating it, and it seemed to go viral already. But I mean, I just say let's get more women engineer.
Let's have the SETI project just be nailing the computer engineer votes. So, yeah. So, cool stuff. And that is our show.
That is it.
So, thank you, Glenn, for being on.
Thank you for letting me have.
And we will see you next week.